they have yet to atone for what they did to my brother and won't even acknowledge that they violated his rights. And so the culture just hasn't changed, and so on today.
And the police officer was charged but acquitted. We just have 10 seconds. You're introducing Al Sharpton at the Juneteenth celebration today in Tulsa.
Absolutely. I'll be introducing Reverend Al Sharpton just to bring some energy and help us channel the fear that we're dealing with and the anger. And hopefully we'll actually start that process of liberation, because in reality, 2020, we're still not free. We're fighting just for the right to live as Black Americans in this country.
Dr. Tiffany Crutcher, I want to thank you so much for being with us, and Demario Solomon Simmons, civil rights lawyer in Tulsa. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Happy Juneteenth. Stay safe.
In commemoration of Juneteenth, we had the honor of sitting down with local front-of-the-line activists Dre and David, who we asked what Juneteenth meant to them and the work ahead, and also why Juneteenth this year especially is so important in light of all the police brutality killings.
First of all, thanks for taking the time out to speak to me today. I really appreciate it. We have a special Juneteenth programming coming up here on KBOO, and we just wanted to sit down with a few activists here in the city and get your thoughts and opinions on what Juneteenth means to you in light of the recent protests. But first and foremost, just tell us a little bit about what you do.
My name is Andre Miller. Born and raised in Portland, Oregon. I went to Whitaker Middle School and Jefferson High School. I studied sociology and criminal justice. Kind of started becoming an activist and just using my social media platform to get national attention to a couple of stories of my friends when they had went missing. Was able to headline news, get CNN, Barack Obama, the Navy, and just get attention like that. So, you know, I realized at that point that, you know, I'm an activist and I have a platform that I can use, and just understanding as a leader. And from there on, you know, I've moved on to other things, you know, with Trayvon Martin, and just trying to figure out, you know, how I can place myself as a leader in future protests and stuff like that.
All right. And David, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, definitely. David Myers. I'm 26 years old, raised in Oregon, been in Portland for about 5 years. I actually went to college at U of O. And for a long time, I would say my voice was silent as far as being an activist. But, you know, recently I've grown into myself and knew that I needed to share my voice, share my opinions, and help, you know, help share this movement in every way possible, you know, whether that's participating in protests or holding Zoom calls to educate people who are not of my ethnicity on, you know, trying to allow them to see life through my eyes. And then also, you know, challenging the people within my work. So I work for Tillamook Creamery, and I've had some great meetings with my coworkers and with the leaders there to allow them to become an ally to our movement as well.
All right, great. Well, let's just jump right into it and discuss an upcoming day we have on Friday that we'd like to celebrate called Juneteenth. First, I'll just go ahead and ask, do you guys think that the recent events of protesting police brutality and people opening their eyes to racism that still exists will help gain more support for Juneteenth to be recognized as a federal holiday? What do you guys think about that?
I'll start off because it's kind of interesting, because I woke up this morning, you know, after seeing other companies and stuff actually declare Juneteenth a holiday, or the mayor, you know, offering city employees 40 hours of paid time off, you know what I'm saying, to kind of like grieve, you know, and to educate themselves and learn more about racial injustices and stuff. So I reached out to my company today, and they've been real real supportive, you know, and asking my opinion as one of the only African Americans in my company and higher management in my company. You know, they've been asking my opinion on what kind of stance they should take, you know. So today I sent them an email and I asked them if they could recognize Juneteenth as a holiday for the company. And, you know, they supported that. So I have Juneteenth off this Friday. You know, they made a quick decision to be supportive of that. And I think most companies should do that. You know, it's kind of a shame that it's taken this much for, you know, for us to be able to get this support. But it's also an interesting time that we're living in right now, you know, coming straight out of COVID, where most people are actually unemployed. Most people are actually making more money on unemployment right now, you know what I'm saying, than they were at their other jobs. So people have a lot of time, and people have a lot of time to be able to educate themselves and study. And people are standing up, and people are taking stances, and businesses are being held accountable and told that they need to take a stance also.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like with everything going on, you know, the first thing that this is allowing is, you know, people to become aware of the problems, people to become aware of the issues that we face every single day. My company was also awesome and gave us Juneteenth off as well. But I think one interesting thing about Juneteenth is that, you know, it kind of... just the timeline of everything, you know. It was after the Emancipation Proclamation, after the ratification of the 13th Amendment. So it kind of stood that, like, freedom and justice has been delayed for the black people. And especially with, you know, the violence taking place against black people as of late, knowing that justice for those crimes is delayed. And so there's kind of an interesting correlation going on there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, for sure. So I guess, too, I wonder as well, in terms of our community, why do you think it's taken so long for the black community as a whole to actually recognize and celebrate Juneteenth rather than something like, let's say, 4th of July?
I mean, to be honest, I've talked with a lot of brothers, and I think we really got complacent. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got complacent after segregation ended. You know what I'm saying? As far as like, okay, now we can actually be in the same public schools. We can eat at the same restaurants. It's not just whites only anymore. You know, it was like after that ended, it was like, okay, how could we push forward even more? You know what I'm saying? Like, we should have been moving forward like we are now. Back right after the civil rights movement, you know, and we got complacent. We was like, okay, well, we're comfortable now, you know, where we still could have kept applying pressure. That's my take on it.
All right. David, you have anything you want to add to that?
No, I mean, I just agree with Trey on all those points.
Okay, cool. All right, and what do you think that people can do in order to bring attention to the government in order to recognize Juneteenth as a federal holiday? What more can we do exactly?
Go
ahead, David.
Yeah, I think everybody should, you know, reach out to their companies, to their schools, you know, to their government. Everybody should, you know, they should let their voice be heard. You know, that's that's the one thing that we all can do. That's the one thing that we have power to do.
Dre, you got anything you want to add to that?
No, I totally agree. I think it's just bringing it to the attention, you know, letting the voice be heard, telling these businesses that, hey, we need a holiday also, you know. So I agree with everything that David just said.
All right. So now let's get into some freeform sort of questioning here. You know, since legislation has fallen short of providing police reforms, where do you see interactions with the police going from here?
David, you want me to speak on it, or you want to speak on it?
You can speak on it first.
I mean, just from a little bit of history about me, man, is my mom, she worked in the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. She was a corrections officer for 25 years at Inverness and at the Justice Center. So I grew up kind of not in the system, but like more so like being able to see my mom on the other side, you know what I'm saying? Like, she would take me to work and I would see all of her coworkers. So I looked at them as role models, you know, and then I was involved in the PAL programs and stuff like that. So I was looking up to officers. But then there was a time where that, as a young African-American man, you know, that switched for me, and they started looking at me differently now, you know. So I started looking at them differently. My take on this, you know, and like I said, and this is what all the young people need to know, is they need to participate in these protests. There's young men and young African-American women at Revolution Hall. They doing their thing. They're having marches. Their structure is peaceful. I recommend that the young youth come out there, you know, and participate in that, because that's how I form my stance on how I want to protest and how I want to be that bridge builder. And my stance that I take, you know, is I support the young movement. I support the people out there doing the protest and marching at Revolution Hall, and I try to implement myself as much as possible as a leader to help them out. On the back end, you know what I'm saying, I'm doing my thing also. I'm going to the Justice Center, and I'm having the dialogue conversation with police officers right at the fence when there's fireworks going off behind us and there's water bottles being thrown at them and they're being cussed at and stuff. You know what I'm saying? So I'm having those conversations with the police officers. There's only a couple questions that I ask of them, you know what I'm saying? And then we go into some more dialogue about, you know, how do we move forward with this? Another thing that we have set up, me and David, we have a meeting with the mayor tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? So that's opening up a platform for us to be able to tell him how we've been protesting, how we've been trying to bridge this gap, give him our short-term goals and our long-term goals. And then that creates the platform. I also am bringing in officers that I've been talking with and having a good dialogue conversations with at the Justice Center in front of the fence. I'm bringing those officers into the meeting. It's a private meeting, but I'm bringing the people that I trust that I've been having conversations with into those meetings so we can start bridging this gap and we can move forward from here.
Mm-hmm. Great. No, David?
Yeah, and the only thing I would add would be like, just because legislation has fallen short now doesn't mean that we won't keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing for reform and for justice to be served and to hold police officers accountable and to implement programs where, you know, police can get back into the youth in a positive way. And so we can kind of up bring that kind of mindset going forward as well.
Yeah, and that's part of the whole thing too, is like, it's good that they're wanting to have these discussions with us, but they should have been having these discussions. They should have been having these discussions. So even though they're having the discussions with us, we're still going to be applying pressure. We're still going to be doing these marches. We're still going to be doing these protests. We're still going to be down at the Justice Center having these dialogue conversations with police officers and stuff until we actually see change. I mean, I'm still working a full-time job. David's still working a full-time job, and we're doing this at night, man. I got four kids, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is something that I'm dedicated to, and I'm dedicated to for my kids because I don't want them to have to do this, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like I dropped the ball on them because I was one of the part of the people that got complacent myself. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't fighting, and I could have continued to fight, you know what I'm saying, as a teenager or as a young man, you know what I'm saying, in my earlier 20s or something like that. I could have been helping them out by doing this. So
okay. All right. Well, you used to talk about the Justice Center, and you know that word justice. Let's talk about that for a minute. What does restorative justice look like in the justice system to you?
You want to take that, David?
No, you can go first.
I mean, it's pretty loaded, you know what I'm saying? And that's definitely part of our long-term goals that we have jotted down to work with the mayor about. But I mean, it's stopping the mandatory minimum sentence, you know what I'm saying? Jail reform is trying to figure out, you know, why African Americans are the less population in the country, you know what I'm saying, but the highest population in the prison system. You know, it's breaking down that whole system. It's breaking down the whole education system. You know, there's different factors into it all, and systemic racism and why we are oppressed and why we're being held back, and we have to channel all of our energy in all of those directions. But we got to understand at the same time that we have to have reasonable bars, you know what I'm saying, in thoughts in our process, you know what I'm saying, because they're not going to be willing to turn it over right away. It's going to take time. It's going to take 10 years, you know what I'm saying? But we got to keep applying pressure, and we got to get this changed now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it starts with, you know, holding the police officers accountable and bringing that justice you know, first and foremost, and not letting it slide, not letting them hide, you know, hide behind the protections that they have, right? So it's up on the police officers to kind of start this restorative justice, and the fact of, you know, admitting where they're at fault, you know, admitting their wrongs, and working with the community to implement programs where they can be held accountable by the community, and so they're not policing themselves.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest things that I think, that it needs to be truth and honesty about the failed systems, and it has to be, you know, a public statement that goes out to be addressed, the accountability, and there needs to be a public address on the steps that they've taken to talk with community members and people to try to bridge the gap, and there needs to be a document to uphold those actions that need to be delivered.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if, like, a police officer, you know, does do, you know, a hate crime or a violence against a black person, like, the department should not be supporting that officer, or should not be hiding that officer. You know what I'm saying? Like, they should not, you know, they should be on the side of the community, and they should make that publicly known.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it's accountability is important. I agree for sure. Now, okay, so we've talked about justice, restorative justice. Now let's talk about when we're on the front lines in these protests, and let's talk about self-defense and what that looks like. Like, it's okay, so in the recent news, in cases where rogue elements like white militias in New Mexico, mm-hmm. and armed white mobs in South Carolina have threatened black people and allies, what in your view does self-defense look like?
What do you want to do, David? You want to go, or you want me to?
Nah, you closer to this one.
All right. I'm actually on the front lines, and I'm I call myself one of the main de-escalators. You know what I'm saying? So in those situations, the first thing is safety. You know what I'm saying? You're trying to make sure that everybody around you is safe, and even the person that's trying to infiltrate the crowd, you got to make sure that they're safe also. So the first thing is safety, and then the second thing is de-escalating. You know what I'm saying? You want to de-escalate the situation as much as possible. We've had situations where last night a truck hit a bicyclist, you know, and then the truck was surrounded by a whole bunch of protesters. Okay, my first question is, do we have the license plate number? Okay, yeah, we got the license plate number. Okay, sir, even though you infiltrated our crowd, I didn't say that, you know what I'm saying? But, sir, I'm going to get you out of here as soon as possible. Follow me. You know what I'm saying? We got his license plate. Mm-hmm. There's no other reason to keep him around. Nothing good is going to come out of it. You know what I'm saying? So safety and then de-escalation is the primary thing. I think what I definitely want to talk with the mayor and the police chief about is trying to protect the protesters. That's the main thing. It's like, what do we do? Because there's going to be those type of people, especially here in Oregon.
And they can be intimidating.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The more concerned that they are, that they're losing their power, you know? So yes. how can they help protect us? Because we're not security guards. We're not police officers. You know what I'm saying? We can help de-escalate, and we can community as much as possible, but I don't want any of the marchers to get hurt. Sometimes we got kids out there. I don't want none of the marchers and protesters to get hurt. You know what I'm saying? I don't want the person in the car to get hurt. There was a time where somebody ran through the crowd and his tires got popped, you know what I'm saying? And I sat with him for like 15 minutes so people wouldn't drag him out the car, you know? I mean, he hit somebody, you know? But it's those type of situations that we need to know, how can we better protect ourselves, or how can the city help protect us, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, those white militias can be very intimidating. I'm speaking from experience, because I protested in Charlottesville, and I remember similar militias and white mobs like that, just dressed like in all just camouflage with AK-47, whatever, you know, the type of huge guns and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And they can be extremely intimidating towards, you know, a black body out there on the front lines who is just out there to speak amongst, you know, about their oppression, but meanwhile you got somebody over here with a military grade style weapons who you don't know what they're going to do with it, when they're going to do with it, and why they're going to do what they're doing. You know what I mean?
And you
so
know, You know what's even more scary is those big guns. They don't really scare me, but what's more scary, man, is that they got people out there that's undercover and dressed up as us, you know what I'm saying, that take pictures of the actual protesters and the activists, and this is why they come up missing, you know what I'm saying? Like, why ain't the media, why ain't the media talking about these activists, these black activists in the last couple of weeks that's been coming up missing?
That's what we call doxing, like, yes.
That's what we need to be talking about, and that's the scariest part about it is I've actually been in an encounter where I had to watch a truck, you know what I'm saying? There was unmarked plates and everything, KKK looking dude, I don't want to, you know, I'm judge him or anything, but I'm just saying from my experience, you know what I'm saying, he looked like he was part of another group that wasn't part of what we were involved in, you know what I'm saying, and taking pictures and stuff. That's the scariest thing is they can track my family down, they can track my vehicle down, they can track me down, you know?
Yes, and that's called doxing, and that's why you have to be extremely, extremely vigilant out there, making sure, like, when you see them take pictures, you have to be extremely careful about, you know, just making sure, you know, you're sometimes that your face is covered, you know, you're in, you know, just preventing measures like that in order to, so your information doesn't get doxed, and you have to worry about your family's private, like, addresses and, you know, where your children go to school at their addresses and stuff like that, you know what I mean? That's how, like, you know, that's how precise they can be sometimes, and that's extremely dangerous towards frontline activists. Yeah, David, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
No, I just think, you know, it's we're learning along the way, right? So, you know, now we're a little more organized. We have people, and I mean, organization and communication is at the forefront. Like, we want to protect our people, and we also want to protect our protesters. And, you know, now with everything happening, you know, now it's, yes, cover the license plate, wear your face mask, and we're just learning along the way.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, Dre, I know you say you guys were working on a documentary. You want to talk to me about that documentary?
Yeah, so it's actually my brother-in-law, Rashad Floyd, with Hard and Hustle Productions. I've been working with the organizers of Rose City Justice pretty much from, I mean, not from day one, where that Friday we did the Peninsula Vigil and then the march to the Justice Center, but they came like 2 days after that Sunday, and they started organizing at the Pioneer Square. And from then, you know, I wanted to participate with them. I wanted to help them out as much as possible. So I started off just documenting, going live, so, you know, my following and my platform can see the positivity that was moving from this. From there, I started getting more people involved. You know, I work for an events company, so now we have multiple streams going on. We have multiple recordings going on. My brother-in-law has a team out there that's, you know, now working directly with Rose City Justice, and we're putting small clips together that's eventually going to turn into a documentary. We've been doing interviews with the organizers and stuff like that, and I mean, we're continuing to march, we're continuing to protest, so right now we're still just documenting, you know, but once this is all, you know, died down and then we got that back end work to do, then we're going to put together the documentary, you know. And it's kind of just weird just living in it right now because I haven't had the time to really, like, soak it all in, you know. I'm still documenting. I haven't had time to look back at my pictures, look back at my footage, my videos, or even just soak it in, like, the moments that I'm living in right now.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Rose City Justice got their Facebook page, they got their Instagram, you know, they'll have their website, I'm hearing, pretty soon. So definitely check it, Rose City Justice, out, who will probably be releasing it, but it's going to be produced and directed by Hard and Hustle Productions, and I'm pretty sure that they'll be putting it out on their social media platforms, which is just Hard and Hustle Productions, as well as their website.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I just want to say, man, this is a real powerful movement going on. I don't want anybody to be drowned out about, you know, what the media is releasing. It's a real powerful movement going on. If anybody wants to be involved, feel free to reach out to me, working2betterryouth@yahoo.com. Revolution Hall, the brothers and sisters with Rose City Justice, with a powerful movement. I encourage all the young kids, youth, to come out. There's going to be the voices here, you know, in the future, and we need them to learn right now. That's all I got.
David?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, it's been encouraging seeing so many people from different backgrounds, different races, different ages come out and support one movement. I would just say that everybody has their part to play in this, and everybody needs to let their voice be heard, whether it's educating their friends, their families, their workers, or doing what needs to be done. Everybody has a part to play.
All right. Well, Dre and David, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out today to speak with me. And as always, thank y'all for the work that you do out there. Much power to you. And please just stay vigilant and stay safe as always. And we really appreciate you and appreciate everything you do for the community. So thank you. And happy Juneteenth to you.
Appreciate you. You as well, sir.
All righty. Thank you so much.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Welcome to KBOO's special Juneteenth celebration broadcast, brought to you by the amazing volunteers here at KBOO Portland, as well as Michael Leverett, special shout out. And of course, little old me, Tammy Hopteas from the Public Affairs Department. I'd like to say thank you to all the activists that were interviewed, as well as to Heather Coleman Cox from Juneteenth, Oregon, whose broadcast we will be broadcasting live tomorrow, Saturday, June 20th, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. KBOO's own Reggae Bob will be anchoring that event. Again, that's going to be live broadcast here on KBOO 90.7 FM and also on KBOO's Facebook Live. Big shout out to Juneteenth Oregon, as well as Jack London Review for making space for Juneteenth Oregon to have their event, and also PDS Jazz for also being another stream for this magnificent celebration. Thank you to all of the KBOO programmers that have created content. You just sit back, stick around, let us do the damn thing. Thank you again for tuning in. Thank you for all the allies. Thank you for all the accomplices. And I want you to remember one thing is very clear. Here at KBOO and in Portland, Oregon, Black Lives Matter.
Okay, this is Heather Coleman Cox, Media Relations Director with Juneteenth Oregon.
Can you talk a little bit about the origins of Juneteenth?
Yes, Juneteenth was founded because in October of 1862, President Lincoln revealed his Emancipation Proclamation via his Gettysburg Address, and he proclaimed that as of January 1st, 1863, all slaves held in United States should be free. 2.5 years later, it came to the attention of President Johnson that there were still over a reported 500,000 African Americans in slavery in Galveston, Texas. So he dispatched General George Granger to that area on June 19th is when he arrived, to let the slaves in that area know that they were free. And at that time, there were no instant messaging or emails. It took him 2 weeks to go via horseback to the different plantations informing the slaves that they were free.
So during that time, there were people that were freed slaves, like, you know, freed people, and they didn't know about this. Like, it just took a while for the message to get to them.
Yes, and that was intentional. As you know, slaves were not allowed to read or write and had very minimal rights as a person, as an American citizen. So, yes, it took over 2 years for over 500,000 slaves that were still in captivity in Texas, Galveston, Texas, to earn their freedom or gain their freedom.
And what did that mean for all of the freed slaves outside of Texas and, you know, in places where they knew they were free?
Well, I can only imagine that it was outrage. There were so many slaves that tried to escape and run away, and a lot of them were captured and punished, severely made a mock of because of them trying to escape. So I can only imagine that the freed slaves back during that time were just outraged that there was still tons of slaves still in bondage.
This Friday on June 19th, the Juneteenth Oregon will be celebrating, I think it's what, like the 150th celebration?
It's the 155th Juneteenth celebration, but here locally it will be our 46th annual celebration.
And can you talk about the origins of Juneteenth specifically in Oregon and the impact it has on Black Portlanders, just considering the state's, you know, racist history?
Right. Okay, our founder, we call her Miss Juneteenth. Her name is Clara Peoples, and she started the first Juneteenth at the shipyards in 1945. From there, in 1972, she started organizing and making it a big event across Portland. She did this tirelessly every year until her passing in 2013, in which her niece Doris Rush took over. And right now, it's just myself and three descendants from Clara Peoples that are Juneteenth Oregon. And it's very important to us that the message of celebrating the emancipation of African American slaves is put out there and that it is celebrated. We are delighted that the current president has brought a lot of light to Juneteenth. Previously, you would not hear Juneteenth being spoken of very much, but now it's on the lips of everyone. People are educating themselves as to what the significance of the word is. So we're very pleased with the response from the country regarding Juneteenth and everything that's going on with the peaceful protests and rallies and all of that. It's just all accumulating to become something great, and we're very thrilled about that. Major corporations like Nike are recognizing Juneteenth as a paid holiday, Multnomah County as well. So we're looking to make this a national holiday, and we've been working on this for years. And again, the mention of Juneteenth by the current president has exploded interest in Juneteenth, so we're very thankful.
And can you explain a little bit what it means, like the actual significance behind having this much recognition for a holiday like Juneteenth that was otherwise not necessarily so popular?
Well, the significance is that it's a part of American history. Unfortunately, it's a stain, if you ask me, a stain. However, it is what it is. And it's just very important that people recognize the contribution that my descendants brought to this country. They were forced here against their will, forced to work for zero wages day and night. And once that freedom was obtained, they, you know, were sort of able to, you know, live a normal life. But then the Jim Crow laws came in order, and so, you know, we're still fighting racism in 2020, over 150 years removed from the Emancipation Proclamation. So the struggle is still here, it's still apparent, and there's still people out there working for equality, and we appreciate everyone that's doing that of all backgrounds and races.
I noticed that a lot of times for us Black people and African Americans in America, our celebrations sometimes come with a price, you know, almost with a sadness, because there is the whole idea of being liberated, but of course it comes at a price of other people not knowing for almost 2 years, like you said, and also just the fact that, you know, we were enslaved. I want to know a little bit about your history and how you got into Juneteenth Oregon and, you know, being part of the facilitators.
Okay, sure. I come from a family of volunteers. So when I came to Oregon. I had moved away for about 12 years, and I came back to Oregon in 2010, and I noted that there was a Juneteenth celebration from Facebook, and I just put my name out there and let the board know that I was interested in volunteering, and that's pretty much how I got on board. We have noted year after year that our crowds are getting larger, community participation is expanding, our vendors are growing, so we're very thankful for all the growth that we're seeing year after year. Our founder, Miss Clara Peoples, she had a vision for Juneteenth to take place on the waterfront, and we're still realizing that vision, and we hope to bring that to the waterfront and celebrate it as a national holiday here very soon.
Now, of course, because of the COVID pandemic, can you explain how things are going to be different?
Absolutely. We are going to still honor Juneteenth. However, it will be an inside event. I want to give a shout out to PDX Jazz and Jack London Bar because they are allowing us to showcase our event live via video stream in their facility at Jack London. This is going to take place on Saturday, June 20th, starting at 1 p.m. until 4 p.m. And viewers can watch from our Juneteenth Oregon Facebook, Juneteenth Org, or our Instagram, Juneteenth Org, or PDX Jazz, their Facebook, or PDX Jazz Instagram. So there's still multiple ways for people to view the event that we are going to put on. We're going to have local artists. We're going to have members from the Black United Fund, from the NAACP. We're going to have a Q&A session, and it's going to be a really nice event. So I encourage everyone to tune in.
And is this an event where you need volunteers, or does the organization count on volunteers? And if so, how can people help out?
Well, this year, due to the pandemic, we're not doing our external event. However, under normal circumstances, if you went to our webpage, JuneteenthOr.com, or on Facebook, Juneteenth Oregon, you can just leave us a message and let us know that you would like to volunteer either in our parade or at our annual event. And we're more than happy to take volunteers of all races, all creeds, all backgrounds.
What do you think your place, or I guess the organization's place, is during a time like this, you know, where a lot of people are hurting and there is a pandemic, you know, although this would be more of a celebratory type of event?
I feel like the fact that we're here, Juneteenth Oregon is here, is we're here to serve the community. We not only have our annual event, we also have a Miss Juneteenth Oregon program where we take high school and middle school girls, and we take them through an 8-month program. Every Saturday they meet for about 4 hours, and we hold different types of workshops. We have speakers coming in. We had a robotics workshop planned this year. However, due to the pandemic, we had to postpone that. Due to the state of our nation right now, it's just very important that people know that they're being taken seriously for their peaceful protests and their peaceful rallies and the equality that they're seeking. And they should know that we're here to support any type of way that we can. And I think that it gives people some assurance that, you know, even though we have all these problems going on in our country, that there are resources available for people to get some support.
The Juneteenth Oregon local chapter has been around for 45 years. I just want to know a little bit about, you know, if you did face any kind of difficulties in the beginning because, again, of the state's history, and then also how it evolved in the last 45 years, you know, between social media and just the, you know, social awakening that's happening.
Okay. Well, as I had stated, Miss Clara Peoples, who we call Miss Juneteenth Oregon, she started the first, she started organizing Juneteenth Oregon in 1972. I can't speak to the challenges that she faced back then. However, I can speak to the challenges that we incur right now. In the city of Portland, we've had a location where we hold our event. That location has been taken. They're going to build some type of facility in the location where we normally have our event. So we were going to have to rent space in a park, which requires funding. We don't really get any pushback for the things that we're trying to do. However, the support, the financial support, has been lagging, for lack of a better word. However, with the new light being shown upon Juneteenth, with this new president, we are starting to hear a lot more from corporations across the city and state that want to be involved. We're very thankful that so many organizations and companies like Nike and Multnomah County are recognizing Juneteenth as a national holiday moving forward. So all of the publicity via social media, letting people know that, hey, we're a small chapter here in Oregon, but we do exist and we are here, and we want you to come out and celebrate with us. We want you to participate and volunteer and just give whatever you can in terms of your resources, your time, and any funding that you have to towards our endeavor of making this a great celebration every year. I do want to add that, again, we have a Miss Juneteenth program. We also do a toy drive in December and a food drive in November for Thanksgiving.
And will those still be happening this year?
To my knowledge, yes, we have not had to postpone anything in terms of those two events, because it's very controlled. We have a certain number of people coming in at a specific time to pick up their toy donations and or their food donations. So we can continue to do that this year because it's controlled and we can abide by any state law of only so many people can congregate in an area at a certain time.
Well, let's hope maybe by that point, you know, things will change a little bit for the better. Let's hope that at least.
Absolutely.
You know, whenever you mention Miss Clara Peoples, it sounds like there's a lot of love behind there.
Yes.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about her and how she's inspired you?
Yes. Clara Peoples, she came to Oregon in, I believe, 1940. And she was always a resource to families, African-American families, in what used to be Northeast Portland was comprised of African-Americans. But with gentrification, a lot of us have been forced out of that neighborhood in that area. However, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, Miss Clara Peoples was a pillar in the community. Families that needed assistance with food or heating or water, she had a lot of contacts and resources to assist families in the community with any types of needs that they had. So, yes, yeah, she's very dear to my heart. I can recall my family receiving food from her back in the day. So she was just a community pillar, and there will be a mural that is in her honor. It's being constructed right now on Northeast 17th in Alberta. We're very happy about that as well.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to have to check that out. I'm right around in that area. For people maybe just tuning in, just mention how they can listen or view the Juneteenth celebration and show support.
Yes. This year, we will hold an internal event at Jack London. It starts at 1 p.m. on Saturday, June 20th. It will stream live on Juneteenth Oregon's Facebook and Instagram pages, as well as PDX Jazz Facebook, and Instagram pages. We have a fabulous lineup of local talent. We will have panels with members of the NAACP and the Black United Fund being conducted and held at that time. So please do tune in. And if you'd like to volunteer next year, just leave us a message on our page and someone will contact you promptly. I just want all of your listeners to know that Juneteenth is a very important date to African Americans across the country, and we are very elated with the response of the peaceful rallies and protests that are demanding equality for all. I just encourage people just to, you know, participate peacefully and let's bring about change together for this nation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you. a.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
Be black. Be brown. Be beautiful. Ah!